Part 1, Listening Comprehension, Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 10 short conversations. At the end of each conversation, one question will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the four choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Number 1. Hi, John. So what happened to you last week?
Oh, I was sick with the flu. What's this I hear about a big assignment we've got to do?
Well, basically, we've got to find two science experiments to do with a group of 8-year-old children at the local primary school, and we've got to complete it by the end of the week.
Question. What can we infer from the conversation?
Number 2. Hi, Tony. You know we've asked to organize something for Bob's farewell party?
Sure. It's about time we started working out details. First thing, what about a venue? In college? A hotel?
I think a hotel will probably work out rather expensive. And I've been looking at the college dining room. That seems pretty reasonable.
Question. What are the speakers talking about?
Number 3. Hey, I think we should make the frame first.
Right. I have some strips of light metal and some wood. Which do you think would be better?
Wood is better. Metal is dangerous to use because it might attract lightning. We can use either paper or cloth to cover the frame.
Question. What are they going to use to make the frame?
Number 4. Uh-oh. These seats are so far back from the stage. I can hardly see the orchestra.
Don't worry about it. The sound in this hall is great. You'll be able to hear every note.
Well, I hope you're right.
Question. Where are the speakers?
Number 5. I wish this sociology textbook weren't so difficult. Look at all the new English vocabulary.
Take it easy. Professor Smith will explain everything in Chinese. When you do understand what you've read for homework, you'll be bored by the lecture.
I hate this kind of class.
Question. What can we infer from the conversation about Professor Smith?
Number 6. How long have you had these symptoms?
For about a week, I think.
It appears to be an infection. I'll give you a prescription for an antibiotic. If the symptoms don't clear up in about 7 days, come see me again.
Question. Where did this conversation probably take place? Number 7. Hello, Maggie? This is Jeff. Is David there?
No, he's off getting his motorcycle fixed. Shall I have him call you when he gets back?
Oh, no, that's okay. Just tell him that I found his address book by our phone. He must have left it here last night during the party.
Question. What will the woman tell David? Number 8. I just heard about a really beautiful park in the east end of town. There are a lot of roses in blossom.
Why don't we walk over there and see for ourselves?
That's a terrific idea.
Question. What will the speakers probably do?
Number 9. I don't know what to do. I can't seem to get anyone in the hospital to listen to my complaints, and this outdated equipment is dangerous. Just look at it.
Are you trying to say that it presents a health hazard?
Yes, I am. The head technician in the lab tried to persuade the hospital administration to replace it, but they are trying to cut costs.
Question. What is the woman complaining about?
Number 10. I've noticed that you spend a lot of time tending your garden. Would you like to join our gardening club? We meet every other Wednesday.
Oh, thanks for the invitation, but this is how I relax. I'd rather not make it something formal and structured.
What a pity.
Question. What can we infer about the man from the conversation? Section B, Directions. In this section, you will hear one long conversation. At the end of the conversation, you will hear 5 questions. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Jane, are your grandparents originally from Russia?
Yes, my grandparents on my mother's side were from Moscow. Why?
Hey, you know my TA, Tanya, she is from Russia, and I plan to give her a present to thank her for her wonderful work during the past semester, but I am kind of stuck on what to give her. Plus, there are usually certain taboos concerning gifts.
I see. Of course, you don't want to give her anything that might upset her. Okay. Have you considered giving her flowers? Any occasion worth the name is appropriate for flower gifts.
Hey, that's a good idea. So what should I give her exactly? Should I send her a floral arrangement or a floral gift basket? What do you suggest?
Well, I think both are all right. Russians usually don't give those as birthday gifts, but since you are not celebrating her birthday, then they should both be okay. Oh, and Russians tend to give flowers in odd numbers for occasions of joy.
Wonderful. So maybe I will give her a floral gift basket. Any suggestions on the kinds of flowers that I may choose?
I seem to remember that roses, lilies, and carnations are the most appropriate for funerals and sympathy, so maybe not those.
Okay, I will remember that. One more thing. Is there any taboo on the color of flowers?
For Russians, yellow flowers signify funerals and sympathy, but I don't think this rule applies to mixed flower bouquets and arrangements. So, basically, you may choose any color that you like.
Great. Thank you so much, Jane. I knew you were the right person to ask.
You are welcome.
Questions 11 to 15 are based on the long conversation you've just heard. 11. Why does the man want to buy Tanya a present? Number 12. Why does the man want the woman's advice on gift giving? Number 13. What do Russians think of floral arrangements? Number 14. Why does the woman suggest the man not to buy roses? Number 15. What would the man probably buy for Tanya?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear five questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the four choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer.
Passage 1. One of America's best-loved writers of short stories was William Sidney Porter, better known as O. Henry. Beginning in 1893, he lived with his family in a house in Austin, Texas. William Porter rented this house in Austin and lived there with his wife Ethel and daughter Margaret for about 2 years. It was saved from destruction, moved, and turned into a museum in 1934. The museum is a good way to learn about the interesting life of O. Henry. William Porter did not start his career as a successful writer. He worked at a pharmacy, farm, land office, and bank. He also loved words and writing. He started a small publication called The Rolling Stone. His funny stories, poems, and drawings were published in the magazine. But it was too costly to continue for long, so he closed the project after about a year. Other troubles would lead the Porters to leave Austin. Porter was accused of financial wrongdoing at the bank and lost his job. Fearing a trial, he fled the country. But he returned because his wife was dying. After her death, he faced trial and was found guilty. He served 3.5 years in the federal prison in Ohio. William Porter would keep his time in prison a secret. But there was one good thing about it. It provided him with time to write. By the time of his release, he had published 14 stories and was becoming well known as O. Henry. Porter later moved to New York City and found great success there. He published over 380 stories in the last 8 years of his life.
Questions 16 to 20 are based on the passage you've just heard. Number 16. Which of the following is true of O. Henry's life in Austin? Number 17. Why did O. Henry close his small publication? Number 18. Why did O. Henry leave Austin? Number 19. What does the speaker say about O. Henry's time in prison? Number 20. Which of the following can be inferred from the passage? Passage 2. It happened again today. I was in the middle of a conversation when the person I was talking to recognized the familiar smartphone buzz in their pocket and reached for it. In the middle of my sentence, while still maintaining eye contact, they selected the incoming email or text, and then they looked down and responded. It happens all the time, yet each instance annoys me. Are we so addicted to smartphones that we simply cannot take a break long enough to hold a cordial, uninterrupted conversation? Experts say that as many as 6% of smartphone users could be termed addicts. According to a Rutgers University study, 49% of people say they keep their email devices nearby when they sleep so that they can listen for new messages. In data gathered by Harris Interactive in June 2012, 30% of smartphone users admitted that they check their cell phones during meals with friends or family. The issue, though, is deeper than politeness. It is destroying relationships. Instead of focusing on the person right in front of you with whom you have chosen to communicate, you are choosing to focus on people who are trying to communicate with you. Experts say that the addiction starts with an incident that demands increased attention and it slowly grows from there. As colleagues and clients recognized your increased responsiveness, they start gradually expecting more. We start to work on or monitor our device 24/7, which, in turn, increases the pressures we felt from the originating incident. Plus, feeling needed is a powerful motivator, and thus the cycle gets out of control.
Questions 21 to 25 are based on the passage you've just heard. 21. What does the speaker find annoying? How many smartphone users keep their phones nearby when sleeping? 23. What is the major problem caused by focusing too much on one smartphone? 24. What may happen when you increase your responses to your colleagues? 25. What is the passage mainly about? 3. The urban gardener can enjoy a city vegetable garden in various ways. For instance, you can grow vegetables in containers, which can be transformed into thriving city gardens. These can be easily incorporated into existing balconies or grown in rooftop gardens. Growing vegetables is more versatile than one might think. Container-grown vegetables will produce an adequate supply of produce for the urban gardener, while eliminating the trouble of large garden plots. Growing vegetables in containers is one of the easiest ways to create a city vegetable garden. With containers, you can grow anything from lettuce and tomatoes to beans and peppers. You can even grow potatoes and vine crops such as squash and cucumbers. As long as there is an adequate drainage, nearly anything can be used to grow vegetables. Typically, smaller containers are used for more shallow-rooted crops like carrots and lettuce. Vegetables like tomatoes, potatoes, and beans will benefit from using containers that are big enough to accommodate their larger root systems. In fact, the use of 5-gallon buckets is not uncommon. To make use of all available space, consider growing vegetable plants in hanging baskets too. In order to help improve drainage and airflow, it may be a good idea to raise your containers about an inch or two off the ground with blocks. Place vegetables in a sunny area that is well protected from wind, which can dry out plants. However, container plants usually require more watering to prevent them from drying out.
Questions 26 to 30 are based on the passage you've just heard. 26. Which of the following is true about container-grown vegetables? Which is the key to the success of growing vegetables in containers? 28. What can be used to determine the size of the containers used? 28. What is the purpose of raising the containers about an inch or two off the ground? 30. What is the passage mainly about?